We have to start off, of course, with the unfortunate story in F2 at the race at Spa in Belgium. Antoine Hubert was killed. He was hit the wall, but then a car that was driven by Juan Manuel Correa struck him, obliterated his car. Correa was going like 200 kilometers per hour when he made contact. It came up that hill, kind of a blind spot. He had no time to react at all. Is this just the harsh reality that auto racing is dangerous? Is that no one's at fault here? It just can be dangerous at times.
Motorsport in general, and specifically Formula Sports, Formula One, Formula Two, IndyCar, NASCAR, all the professional level sports have worked so hard over so long to make the sport as safe as possible, and it allows a lot of people to become complacent with the fact that, well, these are safe sports, but they're definitely not. Anything can happen at any time, and all the sanctioning bodies are really good at analyzing what goes wrong and trying to implement policies or new equipment or new guidelines to make things safer. My opinion of what happened in Spa on the weekend is just simply a chance thing. I don't think a driver made a mistake. I don't think that there's anything that could have been done differently to make that better. The car that lost control, went into, a quote unquote safer barrier at a tire wall. That helped absorb a lot of the contact, but the problem with that type of safety mechanism is tires are springy, and when you put that much energy in, you end up getting a bunch of that energy back in rebound, and that's what launched, or what rebounded his car into oncoming traffic, and not a lot. I don't know how you could have designed against that other than, limiting the speed of the car or having perfect view lines, or, and that's not interesting racing. It's something that every driver accepts when they put their helmet on. And I don't care if you're a go-karter or if you're a professional, that when that happens, when you put your equipment on, bad things can happen. You accept that. We work really hard to make sure that we wear all of our safety gear. We all understand what we're doing. We try and weed out people who are not, qualified to be on the track, but it's an unfortunate, element of speed. And the fact that we've had to lead off with these kinds of stories 2 weeks in a row, it's fortunate that it's very, very uncommon, but it's really sad that things are hitting this close in succession.
Well, the emotional side is really hard for everyone, but for the driver specifically, how do these people, how long does it take to kind of say, okay, the guys were there, how do I move, like, I'm just gonna get back in the car and start again? Do some guys have like a tough time kind of restarting their life?
I think almost everyone's reaction when you're at that type of event is to say, we need to cancel. And then you remember that if you cancel the event, then that just delays the amount of time it takes before you get back and you get to kind of confront your fear again. Formula 2, I think, did the right thing. They always run two events per weekend. So they do their full race, and then Sundays they do what they call a sprint race, which is 15 laps shorter than the feature event. They canceled the event on behalf of their drivers and out of respect to the family. Formula One, I know a lot of the pro drivers don't know personally the F2 drivers, but there's a number of drivers that were very close with Hubert, and even a guy like Daniel Ricciardo, who hasn't been in Formula Two in 10 years, he's been running in the professional ranks. He said his reaction was he didn't want to, go after a period of time. And, I think a lot of these guys were all typically fairly emotional as racers. We all have that, passion, and passion can manifest itself as extreme happiness or extreme anger when things go wrong, or paranoia or whatever you want to call it. It takes a little bit to get, talked off the ledge and remember that this is, this is either what we do professionally or this is what we do for fun. And, the show goes on.
Colin Livingston joins us in the Cantorque Racing Report. So, things definitely go on. I know that F2 had canceled their Sunday sprint race out of respect for Hubert and his family. He was a young boy, 22 years of age. But F1 did race, and Charles Leclerc claims his first F1 victory. Ferrari dominated all the practice sessions. What's happening all of a sudden in F1? Seems a little too late to win anything as far as trophies go, but is this a good sign for next year, or is Mercedes just kind of taking the foot off the gas?
Mercedes definitely isn't. Okay. This was this past weekend in Spa and this next weekend in Monza. These are the kinds of tracks that really favor Ferrari and the Red Bull car. They're very high speed, long straightaway where these cars with the lower load levels, the slippery cars that aren't as they don't have as aggressive aerodynamics, they're going to do really well. The people in Monza right now are going nuts because there's a big Ferrari celebration going on this week. But when people are watching the race, even qualifying on the weekend, the Italian fans are unlike any other fans in racing. And now that Ferrari's doing well, and they employ a driver from Monaco and a driver from Germany, they're adopted Italians for as long as they wear the red. It'll be a really interesting weekend. I think the battle is going to be between Ferrari and Red Bull this weekend. If Mercedes keeps doing what they're doing, though, behind the eight ball as Mercedes should have been at Spa last weekend, they still finished second and third. Some race strategy, which is what Mercedes is really doing better than any team right now. And it could be interesting, but I think it's going to be a walkaway win back to back for Ferrari here. And then we start getting back to more technical where Mercedes should close the deal.
Colin Livingston joins us for the Cantrac Racing Report. Colin, when you look at an IndyCar, bit of a crazy weekend in Portland. And Willpower did win it, but I want to get you making the note here that Graham Rahal lost perspective as braking marker, and that means he slid into someone. What does that mean? What does that mean to lose your perspective of a braking marker?
In non-technical terms, Graham had a colossal brain fart. He just on restarts, you've got all these cars are packed up. Usually, you get strung out, and then you have to rush to catch up, and then as you get to the line, everyone you need to pass is within sight. It's not like once you've been racing at speed for a while and you see that every car is right in front of you. And the temptation to go that little bit further is so strong, especially on a start or a restart. Those are Graham's words, that he severely underjudged the braking zone, which meant he kept trying to pass people. And then by the time he got to the corner, had no hope of stopping. He basically slammed on the brakes. He just didn't have time, car slid, and he wiped out six total cars on the start. What IndyCar really needs to look at, is not so much, is this the racetrack's issue? Is this, they've got to start penalizing guys from being this aggressive on the start. We talked about it 2 weeks ago at Portland or at Pocono. It happens again where, drivers are making errors, but there's no penalty. Graham Rahal is not facing a fine. The three drivers that were involved at Pocono, there's no fine, there's no penalty. As long as that happens, as long as, those kinds of things aren't penalized. We saw it in NASCAR a couple weeks ago. We talk about when Kevin LaCroix took out Alex Tagliani on the last corner of the last lap. As long as the sanctioning bodies don't issue penalties, drivers will still keep taking advantage. It's disappointing. It's not good racing. And, a lot of guys who put a ton of time and hundreds of thousands of dollars in like weekly into these cars, they have no recourse.
And now Scott Dixon, he had an electrical issue. So does that mean like the computer on board was having a tough time? Kit was having a tough time getting organized, or what?
Kit, no Kit on this one. What it sounded like is they had a battery failure. So they were running. Scott had assumed the lead after the first stint and was starting to walk away from the field, and he definitely had the win in his hands. As they were getting ready for their second pit stop, I think he had basically had to pull off the track early because he had started to lose power. Like his car essentially shut down. Fortunately, he was just approaching the last corner, was able to get on pit road, but he lost three laps. And by the time he ended up finishing 16th or 17th, that took him out of contention. But really, I believe if he had gone on to win that race, he would have gone on to win the championship. And, that's the way these things break down. And now he's out of contention. We're down to three drivers. It seems like about 3 months until we get back to the final race, though. I don't know what.
I was going to ask you that. Why such a break?
I couldn't tell you. Okay. There's been numerous 3 and 4 week breaks in IndyCar's schedule this year, which I don't know how you keep people's interest, through these long you know, these long sessions without racing.
Now, before we let you go, we do have to talk about the off-camber carters. Of course,
you guys have
grown this year. I think at 18, 19 people on the track at one point. But Jared Freeston repeats as the 397-pound champion. That's not him. That's the weight between him and his car. And you repeated as the 420-pound champion.
That's just me, though, without the cart.
Yeah. Back now, Freeston, he's going to the Worlds.
Now,
why aren't you?
First of all, I wasn't eligible because I didn't run any of the qualifying races.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a great guy, and I think I'm pretty quick in a cart, but you still have to participate and get in. They only really offer the tickets to certain weight categories. I would never compete with those guys that won the tickets. But it's great that we're sending two of our guys that raced with us. Jared's going over and Noel Dowler's going over
in
a different category. It'll be in Italy.
And so when you go to the Worlds for karting, how many countries are there? How many racers will be in these races?
Boy, that's a good question. I can guess that there will be racers from like 35, 40 countries, okay. Hundreds of drivers
in
different categories.
Yeah, but in one category, what would it be 18? Would it be 16? Do you know any, just a guess, even 20?
In our category, I think there are probably between 60 and 70 drivers qualified. I don't know how many actually show up because there's a lot of, you have to self-fund your way over there.
Okay.
Your ticket doesn't, get you airfare or accommodation or anything. And basically, they provide you a cart and then...
Oh, so you don't have to fly with your cart. They'll have a cart there for you.
No, you're not allowed to do that because then you could have all kinds of trick things. They supply the cart. They supply the engines. They're all teched. In each category has a certain brand. So in... I can't keep the brand straight. It doesn't matter. Jared's going to be running one brand of cart, and I think Jared's running a Sodi cart. Noel's going to be running a Burrell, and that's just in weight categories.
Okay.
Then Canada sends over a crew of mechanics, parts, pieces, wow, things like that. So, the guys will have their stuff tuned and wrenched on. I think you get a cart suit, so you go over there as Team Canada. And then it's a 5 or 6 day event where the mindset a lot of people have is they have to be quick out of the blocks, and I think that really works against success. You've got to kind of go there with the idea that you don't even need to be in the top whatever. Go out and learn the track, then progress slowly. So that once you start getting down to the further qualifying rounds and the further practice rounds, then you start setting goals like, okay, today I need to be in the top 30. Then tomorrow, if I make it, then I need to be in the top 20. Then I can go. You can't win anything until you get to the final anyway. So
there'll be different days of qualifying, kind of breaking it down. And then the race itself, like, is 20 carters on a track, is that safe or is it smaller number better? Like 16.
No, it's definitely safe. And these are all highly, highly skilled, highly qualified people. The problem that's been relayed back is that because people, they put so much emphasis on trying to win this for, it's basically bragging rights. It's not like you walk away with a contract to drive anywhere. You get a trophy and that's about it. And the bragging rights is saying that you won the Rotax Grand Finals. Too many people make this a life or death kind of race that there's not a lot of penalties issued for aggressive driving. So you'll see people who just they're tired, they're not going to overtake with skill, they're just going to push you out of the way, and you got to be really aware of that kind of stuff. But there's not a lot you can do to defend when someone hits you from behind.
Yeah, I would think not. Well, next year is your goal to get to the Worlds, or are you just too busy that you don't qualify often enough?
I don't really have any aspiration to do that. There's a lot of big time. We get a lot of great racing here, so it's not on my horizon. I think next year, even though I said this a year ago, next year I think I'll be running in the lighter weight category. We've been making a lot of dietary and workout changes.
Dude, we'll bring in a scale. We did show weight before in the show. I have no problem doing it. So you got to be at 397.
Yeah,
well, you and your cart.
Yeah, I mean, my advantage is I could cut my hair and probably shave a couple of pounds off there if it comes down to it.
That's pretty good flow right now. Strady's staring at it the whole time.
Well, I've been distracted.
No.
Yeah, the look doesn't bother me, but his hand on my knee is a little uncomfortable.
Colin, great stuff, man. We'll chat with you next Thursday.
You betcha. Thanks, guys.